host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to Alchemy. Joining me today, Joe Caltabiano, CEO at Choice Consolidation Group. Joe, great to have you on the show, man.
Jeff, thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of what you guys have been doing and excited to be a part of it and look forward to having a conversation today.
Yeah, you know, that we've been doing the show really just as an effort to, get all the leaders out there talking about what they're doing and really educate, you know, the world on all the great things coming out of the cannabis industry. So excited to have you on, obviously, you know, a pioneer in the space. And, you know, for everyone that's tuning in right now, you know, Joe's been working on a new SPAC. So excited to talk about that. But also, you know, your background, you were co-founder of Cresco Labs from, 2013 all the way through recently, in the last year. And so you've really been, a respected and important voice in this emerging industry. So, you know, I think it'd be, be great to hear from you and, you know, talk to us a little bit about, I'd say, one, how you even got involved in cannabis and, you know, had such an exciting, you know, start in this incredible space.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always weird to hear yourself be referred to as a pioneer, but as I look back and it's, you know, it's been a long time since the early days of even thinking about getting in this space. My way into cannabis came, I was a leukemia survivor as a young kid and have been very involved in cancer philanthropic activities and just very interested in how the medical community engages with cannabis. And, you know, I was seven when I got diagnosed, so it wasn't like I didn't utilize cannabis as a young kid, but being involved in a lot of these cancer philanthropic endeavors, you see the modern day 20, 30, 40, 50, pick an age, and their experience and how cannabis ultimately is helping them. And then when I would go to long-term cancer follow-up appointments at various hospitals, I would always ask the doctors, hey, what do you think about cannabis? And, you know, seeing the evolution of how these very educated but very methodical physicians and nurses and hospital administrators would look at it, but you saw it start to change. So when Illinois passed a law in 2013, actually to take a step back, when Michigan passed their law that was kind of a caregiver-based model, I quickly looked at doing it. But coming from the mortgage industry with a very successful career with a ton of licenses, I wasn't looking at sticking my thumb in the eye of the federal government in a program like Michigan's, you know, kind of quasi-California caregiver model. When Illinois passed the law, it was very different. It was this hyper-regulated, really driven around compliance and regulation. And I thought, hey, if I could be part of a group or start a company that was the most regulated in the most regulated market, I will be the last one that the feds come and knock on their door. And as odd as that sounds, but like that was a guiding principle when I went and asked a few guys if they wanted to start Cresco. So, you know, back in the mortgage days, it was, we met in secret. It was hushed conversations. Quickly that changed. And you saw this incredible opportunity that was blossoming in the state of Illinois. And was excited to put Cresco together, go out and do a fundraise, raise, you know, not only bank debt and some equity, but then ultimately win three cultivation licenses in Illinois. And then, you know, we can certainly dive into that. But that gives you a little background on how I got the idea to start Cresco and get some friends involved to go out and start to build that business. So it was a great ride. And, you know, certainly a lot has changed from those very early days, but it's been every bit as exciting and exhilarating and devastating and happy and all of the emotions that go into being a pioneer in an industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as far as Cresco is concerned, you know, when I'm thinking about Cresco, it's like, wow, you know, here you are kind of, you know, you helped really expand one of the country's largest MSOs to date, really from just a very small startup with big ideas to, you know, one of the most influential and most profitable MSOs out there. And I think, you know, just coming from you and being an entrepreneur, you know, what do you think it is about, you know, what are the secret ingredients about being, you know, kind of having an idea, building an MSO from the ground up? Like, what are the keys to success of making something like that successful?
Well, timing is everything, right? I mean, that is just part of business. So putting yourself in the right place at the right time is critically important. And when those opportunities present themselves, jump at them, but you can't just kind of dip your toe in the water. You do have to dive right into the deep end, which is what we did. So, you know, we were very fortunate in the timing. Mm-hmm. We were able to arrange capital. You know, that's something that a lot of people, I think, in this industry don't recognize how hard it is to put the capital together until they go out and start to do it, right? It's still federally illegal. Safe Banking Act isn't available. Mm-hmm. You know, things that other industries typically don't deal with, cannabis does on a daily basis. So, you know, it was obviously being in the right place, arranging the capital, and then having a vision and executing against it, which was really, again, being a very compliance and regulated focused company in this incredibly tight Illinois program. And then working, what really was neat was to see all of the companies to the left and right of us, the GTIs and the Veranos and the Pharmacans and, you know, others, us all working together to get through these headwinds in Illinois, which was a very conservative Republican governor and Governor Rauner who didn't like the cannabis program. And we had to kind of forge our way through this very difficult time. We always joked around that we were built in the fires of Illinois. And that's why you've got a lot of the strongest companies in the space came from this Illinois marketplace and have gone on to do phenomenal things. So it was really neat to be a part of that at that time and then work together with, you know, what you would typically call competitors, but really they were cooperation, where you have a common goal of improving the program, giving access to medicine to the people who need it most. How do you do that with a legislative body and a gubernatorial situation that was not favorable, and then navigating in that, and then ultimately winning licenses in other markets to kind of de-risk the business, and then watching that flourish as more capital comes into place, you're able to take the company public, and then start seeing the talent level come to the space. Because again, 2014, 2015, it wasn't like people were leaving Kraft Foods to join a cannabis startup, but now you're seeing a flood of individuals from, you know, Anheuser-Busch or Kraft Foods or pick a marketing firm that can't wait to get involved in the cannabis industry. And now you get to bring in outside ideas from mega industries and apply them into this very nuanced space.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, those are all, you know, great points on, you know, how you make really a cannabis brand successful. What about, you know, on the flip side, you know, what are some of the things that actually make it a failure? You know, because you see a lot of people out there that start and they don't make it.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is when you see people who are spending the money that didn't have to arrange the money, you know, when the, you know, the P&L side, if you look at the people who are out there raising the capital, aren't the ones who are spending the capital, you get a very cloudy vision of how easy it is to bring capital in this space. So then you go and overspend on design and you overspend on packaging and you overspend on, you know, marketing dollars that you don't have to do. You have a very, in most of the states that I'm familiar in operating with, you have a supply-demand imbalance. So it's about getting the product on the shelves more than it is creating the iPhone box that, you know, is this perfect opening experience. You really want to make sure you invest your capital wisely so you have money for rainy days, because money is either in the cannabis industry or it's out. It kind of ebbs and flows. And if you aren't smart with your capital arranging, you can't open those stores. You can't do the expansions when you need to. You can't hire the right talent. And I think there's a lot of people out there who have phenomenal plans and they're great visionaries, but they don't recognize how hard capital is to come by. And then the game's over. It doesn't slowly fade away. It ends. And that's a very difficult thing for a lot of people to stomach, because there's no fallback plan when your capital doesn't come together in cannabis. So
totally. You know, I think from a, you know, you kind of been through this before, and obviously now you're, you know, working on your SPAC, but I think, you know, when you're talking about cannabis and you're operating in cannabis, there's a tremendous amount of challenges, right? So you have a very complex web of regulations, you know, businesses really have to understand how to navigate differently in multiple states, right? They have to understand how they can do their, you know, advertising and marketing and what they can and can't do. You know, there's just so many gotcha moments, right? Or regulatory burdens, if you will. How are you looking at the space right now? Maybe even yourself or maybe some of your peers, like, you know, what do you think is I would say the largest challenge out there when it comes to regulation?
Well, just the lack of consistency is exactly that. So as you're out and you're talking to people about coming in the space and you're telling them what an incredible opportunity it is, but you also have to warn them, you know, and it's funny when I'm on an interview with somebody and whether it's a CFO, whether it's a marketing person, whether it's a salesperson, I'm like, this will be the most exciting job you will ever have. And it simultaneously will be the single most frustrating job you've ever had. Because if you don't like, if you view obstacles as this big giant boulder that you don't know how to get around, you're not going to like this. Because this is all about how do I get over, how do I get around, how do I navigate these very unique circumstances that there's no playbook for. And, you know, as this industry continues to evolve, you know, you do hope you see some standardization, but, you know, to create a brand that really resonates with a customer, and then you take that brand into another market that doesn't like the name because maybe they feel it is too geared towards children, or it doesn't address the medical market in the way they want, or whatever the case may be. And now all of this time, effort, and money you spend into a brand has to get rebranded to suit the needs of a regulator in some sub-market that you just entered is very frustrating. And, you know, it's very demoralizing and it feels like it's a giant step backwards for a lot of people who put time, effort, and money into, you know, really understanding the customer. So, you know, the inconsistency from state to state is very frustrating. You've seen some big changes in the positive sense. You know, it used to be very difficult to navigate landlords because landlords would have bank debt and there would be reasons why the retail stores couldn't be on the corner of Main and Main. You know, so now you're seeing landlords become more flexible and you know, retail stores are able to sit next to Starbucks, next to Whole Foods, and next to Walgreens. That wasn't always the case. So now, you know, you're seeing the metamorphosis of where retail can actually be located. That's a great positive, but then you find the perfect location and again, banking comes into play and they can't take money from a cannabis company and that shuts it down. So, you know, every twist and turn continues to evolve. Banking would be something that would really help eliminate, you know, probably 50% of the operating headaches if there was a federalized plan to deal with the banking side of the cannabis industry.
Makes sense. So I think from a, you know, a SPAC perspective, you know, I feel like every other day I'm seeing one of my friends launch a SPAC in the last 12 months. So, you know, I was excited to have you on and, you know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, choice consolidation and what you're doing and maybe some of your goals there and give us a little lay of the land.
Yeah. So, you know, excited to put a SPAC together. We were very fortunate to be able to raise capital, worked with Canaccord and Beacon to raise $172 million in a very short period of time. I will say one of the nice things about obviously the pandemic was being able to sit at your desk and have 52 meetings in 3 days without spanning the globe was certainly a positive situation. But, you know, it's back to reality now, I think. You know, SPACs are a very unique thing, and they are a great vehicle if put together properly, if capital is arranged properly, and your shareholder base understands what you're doing. We had a very deliberate message that we delivered to, you know, the investors, and that was, hey, there are markets that we think are very important in cannabis. There are opportunities that create this incredible return on invested capital that are out there. And the market is not saturated, but you have to find and spend your money very wisely. So we went out and looked at markets and did a ton of due diligence on which markets we feel will generate the best returns for investors. And that's Illinois, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Arizona, and Nevada as kind of our five core markets that we're really targeting from the SPAC standpoint. And we're looking for operating assets and being vertical in all of those markets. Because I think it's very important and very unique to cannabis that you can control an entire supply chain, all the way from cultivation up through manufacturing, brand development, distribution, and then owning your own brick and mortar retail. Now, not to say that I think you won't see changes, you know, whether interstate commerce comes into play or Walgreens starts, you know, selling medicated gummies at some point. But being vertical right now is a really important thing. We'll double down on kind of the middle verticals. But with that being said, we went out and had a very deliberate message. We've had a ton of conversations. I've looked at hundreds of deals and excited to say that we've got a lot of momentum behind us towards executing on our plan. Whereas you've certainly seen some SPACs pivot or get late into the game and not be able to deliver on their vision they had very early on. And then you start seeing them making decisions that might not be in the best interest of the shareholders and might not be in the best interest of the overall investors, but a little bit more driven towards, hey, we've got this ticking time against us. How do we get this deal done in order to meet, you know, kind of what we, at least the broad context of what we set out to do? Fortunately with Choice and fortunately with, you know, myself and the investors that I was able to work with and arrange this capital, we're following through on our plan, and I have a high degree of confidence that we'll be able to execute in the states that I've talked about since day one or some version of there with a scaled company that has rooted in fundamental economics that is a great start to a future MSO that can come out and compete with a lot of the incumbent operators who are really starting to hit their stride and really start to create operating leverage.
You know, I think, you know, I'm sure you've seen this, but in the last 12 months, you know, the cannabis landscape is really rapidly starting to kind of get a strong foothold across, you know, new states that have just come on board. You know, obviously in the last, you know, 2 months, New York has come on board, New Jersey came on board prior to that. So there's some really big movements happening where things are starting to change and things are starting to become, you know, kind of fairly mainstream. So, you know, anything that you're looking at as, I'd say, as new states come on board, are you kind of looking in the same regions that you've operated in the past, or are you looking to kind of land grab other areas?
Sure. You know, I think the land grab game isn't the right one to play anymore. It's really about going deep in the markets that you understand and you can execute on and where that high degree of return on investment can be had. Now, with new states coming online, what I also know is it takes time for those states to really work things out. So New York, you know, while it did pass, we don't know what the future rules look like, and we don't know what that operating market is. New Jersey's still kind of going through that with towns opting in to opting out. So there is something, there is a benefit to kind of that second mover advantage strategy. So I'll probably wait and see how some of these markets develop. You know, the first step for SPAC is to identify the qualifying transaction and get through that in the time frames that you set forth initially. So upon completing that, we'll take a kind of a second look at new markets. Simultaneously, we will apply in some of the markets as new license opportunities become available. But, you know, we're really focused on executing on our initial day one strategy. And until we accomplish that mission, you know, we won't take our blinders off. But with that being said, you know, it's certainly tuned into, you know, my home state of New York and what's going on there. And it's incredibly exciting. I mean, honestly, there's really nothing more important than New York passing a law, implementing that law. You know, I think it will create capital opportunities. It will create awareness opportunities. It will create social equity opportunities. It will really change the face of how cannabis ultimately looks on the world stage. Because, you know, New York, being a New Yorker, we all think that that's the epicenter of the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, given the amount of foreign visitors that come there and the amount of attention that New York gets, that program getting off to a good start will be paramount to the future success. It's kind of unfortunate the capital markets haven't reacted as positively to that as I would have hoped or you would have thought. But, you know, you're seeing it's going to be hard for Chase or Bank of America or whomever to not take into account that, you know, all of their employees in that marketplace can now consume cannabis. You're going to start to see drug testing go away. You're going to start seeing some changes in the overall environment of the United States because of New York coming online.
Yeah, no, already seeing it too. I mean, I think there was even something last week with Amazon, right? That they're going to be not doing those drug testing, and many other businesses following suit. So I'm in New York also, so I'm very in tuned and seeing what's happened. So it's an exciting movement. But you know, Joe, it's been great to reconnect and great to have you on the show. And you know, obviously, you know, we'll be looking at everything that you're doing with your SPAC, and you know, always exciting as kind of up at bat again. And you know, appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, Jeff. I mean, it's been great, and I'm really excited to come back on once we do announce this qualifying transaction and let you know all of the nuances that that go on, you know, from taking a SPAC from inception all the way through the qualifying transaction and then becoming an operating company. So it's been a great environment, and very fortunate to work with some incredible people to get to, you know, what I've been able to accomplish and what we're going to accomplish going forward.
Excellent. Well, good luck with everything. And yeah, round two coming back on here soon.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Have a great day.
All right, Joe, you too.
Appreciate it.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.